This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio in Washington. Neil Conan is out today. 26 years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that Sony Corporation could not be sued if owners of their Betamax VCRs recorded television programs and used the recordings illegally. Fast forward to today. Betamax is history, and so is the idea that the producers of recording and distribution technology are immune from their creation's illegal applications. In the case of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios versus Grokster, the Supreme Court today ruled that file-sharing companies can be sued by the recording industry and other groups who feel that they're hurt by illegal file trading. And if the courts find that the primary intent is intended purpose of the software is to illegally exchange files, the companies can be held liable. Tens of thousands of Americans use these services to swap files online. Many of those files, the recording industry says the vast majority of them, are illegal copies. The case has wide implications for the online file-swapping digital innovation and that entire universe out there of digital software dealing with file sharing and the power of the copyright. Later in the hour, we're going to take a look at another of today's Supreme Court rulings. This one, the power of journalists to protect their sources. And if you're not going to make it to D.C. for this summer Smithsonian Folklife Festival, we'll bring a taste of it to you when an expert joins us with tips on decorating your camel. But first, file sharing and the copyright law and the U.S. Supreme Court. Join in conversation if you have a phone call, if you work in the high-tech world and you're worried about the impact of this decision on innovation, give us a call. If you're a musician, a musical consumer, or in the industry, and you're worried about your intellectual property and property rights, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Send us an email at TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us now from his office in Washington, D.C. is Tony Morrow. He's a Supreme Court reporter for the weekly newspaper Legal Times. Tony, welcome.
Thank you.
So this decision doesn't mean Grokster goes out of business today.
No, not at all. The proceedings will go back to the Circuit Court of Appeals in California for further review. And it is possible that Grokster and other companies like it can make out a case that more and more there are legal and non-infringing uses for their technology. And if they can make a convincing case of that, they might survive. The problem here was that everybody seemed to recognize, the justices certainly did, that the vast majority of the downloads that Grokster makes possible are illegal. It's a business based on theft, essentially, is what the Supreme Court felt, and you can't really do that.
Now, that's what the Supreme Court felt, but the ruling means that Grokster and other file-sharing companies can be sued, but it doesn't mean that they're going to lose the lawsuit.
That's right. Especially, I think the court recognizes that this is a sort of fast-moving technology, and there are a number of companies now that are making a go of it with legal downloading where you actually pay for it, and that over time the business model may change. The court is wary of sort of shutting down an entire technology at the beginning, and they didn't do it with VCRs, and they seemed not to want to do it with downloads as well.
Apart from the obvious fact that the case now may be heard in court, is there anything in the ruling that would make it harder for Grokster and the file sharing industry, harder for them to win their case?
Well, there are at least three justices who believe that even if a company like Grokster has pure intentions and does not really want to, doesn't encourage theft, there still is a violation of copyright. But at least for now, it seems that the companies like Grokster might be able to make a case.
I just wonder if you make reference to the Supreme Court decision in your lawsuit.
Well. Yeah, that'll help, and yeah. But I think it's kind of in flux.
going to be difficult to apply this standard? I mean, you talked about the intent and sort of this gray area of whether or not, you know, because 90 or 98 or 99% of your users are using it illegally, but you didn't intend that. Is there now a burden on them to do that, or does this decision mean that it won't matter what their intention was and whether or not they can improve their intentions?
I think intention does matter. Now, I've already seen some sort of cynical comments that all you have to do is dress it up and make the claim that you're encouraging legal use and discouraging illegal use, and then people can do what they want, like they've been doing already. But I think the courts now are under instructions to take a look at intent and to see if you know, violating copyright was what the business is all about.
Will this apply only to the file sharing business, the digital file sharing business, or are there broader implications?
Well, I think this seems to be the flavor of the day, but the same principle could be used in technologies as yet unforeseen. That's the way that the Supreme Court operates in this area. Is they move slowly, but technology moves a lot faster. So they try to lay down rules that can be used in the future.
All right, well, Tony, joining us now is Stanley Leibowitz, a professor of economics at the University of Texas at Dallas and director of the university's Center for Property Rights and Innovation. And he joins us from the studios of KERA in Dallas. Welcome, Stanley Leibowitz.
Thanks for having me.
What do you take from today's decision?
Well, I was, I guess, a bit surprised, as many were, that there was unanimous decision. But that's because I was expecting, as apparently were most others, a decision on the hard issue of what the scope of the Betamax case should be. The court actually decided to make it an easier case for themselves, in my reading. What they've basically done is to say, none of us like what's going on here. The file sharers clearly had no other motive except, these are the companies that created these networks, to try to make some money by having people download files that were copyrighted. And that activity was always considered to be illegal, the individuals who did the downloading. But the networks, Grokster and whatnot, were quite explicit, if you read their advertising and whatnot, that they were trying to convince people that that's exactly what they should do, and that was their business model. And the Supreme Court didn't like that at all. And they said, look, this is a much easier case than others have said. We're not going to allow what are essentially parasites on an industry to allow and suck off the revenues. And so we're just going to say that that's illegal. And that's what they've done.
We are taking your phone calls today on the Supreme Court's Grokster decision, 800-989-8255. The Supreme Court justices unanimously ruled that Grokster and other file-sharing companies that make file-sharing software may be sued because of copyright infringements. Jared is on the line from Grand Junction, Colorado. Hello, Jared.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Good. You know, I'm pleased with this ruling. I'm in a band, and we're in the process right now of recording our second studio album. And we're 9 people. And we put in hundreds and hundreds of man hours, thousands of man hours, to put this music together. And to have one person be able to buy the album and share it with thousands of people who might even want that album, this is a great ruling for musicians who find it hard to make it on the road, and album sales, we're hoping, you know, will be our form of income, something to keep us, to help us have the ability to continue playing music.
All right, Jared.
And, we're really happy with this ruling. We're really hoping that this really changes some of the file sharing on the internet.
What do you make of the arguments that file sharing has really helped promote the music business and allow a lot of particularly starting artists, musicians, and groups to get heard because this stuff is being shared so widely?
Well, that's
you
right.
Know,
let me hear from Jared first. Then yeah, hear from you. Yeah, Jared.
Well, you know, I think that musicians who want to get their stuff heard have to, you know, they make copies of their albums, they send them to all the radio stations and do the same thing as musicians have done forever. I mean, the music industry has been around a long time without file sharing.
All right.
I understand the new bands, we're a new band also, you know, we're recording our second album, but this is, It may help some young folks who are getting started in some new bands, but it definitely can be detrimental to bands that are, that's what they're counting on is album sales.
All right, Jared, thank you for your call.
Thank you for your time.
Stanley Liebowitz, were you about to chime in on
yeah.
that one?
Certainly, file sharing might alter the nature of this publicity that exists to some extent, where some group that might not have gotten the normal public relations campaign can make a name for itself through file sharing. That has happened from time to time. But it's a mistake, I think, to generalize from what can happen with one particular band to the whole industry. The evidence seems to be quite strong that, in fact, revenues for the industry as a whole have gone down. Mm. And the decline started almost exactly when file sharing took off. And the decline is really very large. It's in the order of 30% now. So while there may be a few bands that benefit, there are a lot more bands that get hurt.
Tony Morrow at Legal Times, how does the Grokster case differ from the Napster debate?
Well, Grokster is sort of the next generation. Napster, its big problem was that it was a sort of a centralized operation, and at least the old version of Napster, where the sharing was done off of a central computer. As I understand Grokster, the software enables users to download material off other people's individual personal computers. So it's a kind of a decentralized operation, which enabled Grokster to say, hey, you know, we make the software. Yeah. We don't know what people are doing with it, so it's not our problem.
Takes them out of the middle. We're talking today about the Supreme Court ruling, which allows lawsuits against file trading software companies when their users break the law. Behind the techno talk lie big implications for the future of online innovations and the film and recording industries. After the break, we'll hear from the former president of Grokster. And what do you think? Taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. You can send us an email at totn@npr.org. I'm Frank Stacio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Frank Stacio in Washington. Neil Conan's out today. Earlier today, the Supreme Court handed down a landmark decision on the power of the copyright in the digital age. In a unanimous decision, the justices ruled that companies that make software enabling music and video piracy are vulnerable to lawsuits from groups whose material is stolen. You're invited to join the discussion. If you work in the online world, what effect will this decision have on the future of innovation? If you're a musician, will the ruling help your industry? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, email address totn@npr.org. With us from member station KERA in Dallas is Stanley Liebowitz, director of the Center for Property Rights and Innovation at the University of Texas. And Tony Morrow is with us, reporter for the Legal Times newspaper. Tony, does this have any effect on the Betamax decision?
Well, the analysis I'm hearing is that ruling still stands. It really wasn't overturned, even though the court seemed to have taken a harsher view of copyright infringement today than it did in 1984 with the Betamax decision. But I think there still is going to be this balancing between the infringement of copyrights on the one hand and the value of new technology on the other hand.
All right. Tony Morrow, Supreme Court reporter for Legal Times. Thanks very much for joining us.
Sure. Thank you.
Joining us now is Wayne Rosso. He's a former president of Grokster, current CEO of Matchbox. We will be talking with him later in the program, but I want to get back to you, Stanley Liebowitz, and talk a little bit about other decisions. Certainly the technology is changing. The field is broadening in terms of technology. And you talked about the Supreme Court being a little bit slower behind, obviously, the technology. Is this something where the Supreme Court is well behind the technology, that in fact there are already ways to get around this decision?
Well, it's not clear that, remember, the decision just says that right now Grokster can get sued. I also think when you read the decisions, it's pretty clear that the Supreme Court is like hinting to the appeals court that they expect that not only will Grokster be sued, but that Grokster will lose. Now, let's say that Grokster does lose. That's not clear that it's going to stop file sharing. Grokster is one file sharing network, and there are other file sharing networks that the industry can go after. The difficulty is that U.S. law only applies to the U.S., and file sharing networks that are in other countries, it's not clear how easily those can be shut down. And all we might find from this is that the well-known American file sharing networks disappear, but some of the foreign networks continue and rise in their place.
Let's go to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. LaShawn is on the line. Hello, LaShawn.
Hello, it's LaShawn.
LaShawn.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. I had a question. Is this an attempt by the judiciary to do what the legislative branch can't? Senator Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, proposed this exact type of bill in 2004, that those who manufacture and produce these technologies could be held criminally liable and civilly liable for the copyright material stolen. The bill was defeated in the Senate, but now the judiciary has just completely bypassed the entire law amending system.
Would you like me to say something?
Yeah, I wonder, do you see this as a way of getting around or rewriting copyright law?
No, I don't. And I think the court made it a very narrow decision. They didn't overturn Betamax. They specifically said Betamax is not part of this decision. What they're looking at is very narrow. There are these firms out there that haven't pretended to do anything other than engage in copyright induce their customers to engage in copyright violations, and because of that, they're going to allow them to basically be shut down. Is my guess. Now, closer cases where firms have real business models with technologies that could be allowed to have people exchange files, those, I think, are unaffected by this decision. There may be a later decision that will come down that will have to decide whether the Sony case still stands, because right now there are conflicting views as to what the Sony case actually says. Some people say it says that if you have any small amount of potential non-infringing uses, then it's actually not infringement. And the other people think that it requires a large amount of actual non-infringing uses. But the court specifically said they'd... Okay, let me finish, please. The court specifically said they're not deciding that now.
All right, LaShawn, thanks very much for your call. Joining us now is Wayne Rosso. He's the former president of Grokster, current CEO of Mashbox. It's an alternative file-sharing service. And he joins us by phone from Virginia Beach. Wayne, welcome.
Thank you very much. How are things in Washington?
Pretty good. How are things with you after today's ruling? What do you think?
Well, you know, it's really funny. It's the first time any individual on Earth, I think, has ever been the respondent and the beneficiary, the winner and the loser of the same lawsuit, Supreme Court decision, in one day.
How's that?
Well, having been the former president of Grokster, I think I lost. But as the current CEO of Mashbox, I won big.
Well, but it's another file-sharing service, right?
Oh, but fully authorized. What Mashbox will be doing when we launch our beta application very shortly, in a matter of days, in fact, will be providing users with the exact same experience they get on Grokster, except instead of getting unauthorized copies of major record labels' content, they'll be getting authorized copies instead.
You mean you're going to have to pay for it?
It's a safe haven, and it, as your earlier caller had mentioned, we're the first and the only right now that's really out there with the new legitimized file sharing applications.
What, authorized in that you will pay for the music?
Yes. Well, what will happen is that when people try to download a unauthorized MP3. That is owned by a major record company, they will, instead of getting that illegal version, get an authorized version that they will be able to listen to for a limited number of times all the way through, and then have the option to purchase or not purchase.
I see. So ultimately, it becomes a buying service.
Ultimately, yes. But more important, and I think to the point, an actual sampling service. Mashbox will actually be the truth test to see whether users, as they claimed in the past, are really using P2P as a way to sample new music before they purchase it.
Well, why would you do that if you're going to buy the music? Why not? There's all kinds of ways to buy music online.
Yes, but not hear the entire song first and several times. Heretofore, it's only been these crappy little 30-second clips. you know, that are worthless and nobody cares about. This way you'll be able to really check out the deep cuts that you don't hear on radio. Plus, I might add, it will also have millions and millions of free titles available.
That the artists themselves have authorized.
Well, not only that, but our system, like I say, it's just like any file sharing application. And if the content owners or the music owners don't register their content within our databases, then that content goes through unhindered. So you're plugging into millions and millions of people on all the major file sharing networks. They're sharing their content, yet we are protecting people from uploading content that's going to get them in trouble.
All right, Wayne. Well, thank you very much. Wayne Rosso is CEO of Mashbox and former president of Grokster. He joined us by phone from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Thanks for talking with us. Let's go to the lines now, where Bob is on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say we're extremely pleased with this ruling today in Nashville. I'm the president of the Nashville Songwriters Association, probably the largest songwriters group in the country, and we've been howling in the wilderness about this for several years, and this was unexpected, and I feel like it's a real victory for songwriters. There was a guy with a band on earlier. Bands sometimes will advocate the distribution of their material free on the Internet, but for songwriters, we can't sell concert tickets and T-shirts and ball caps and beer cozies. We are completely dependent upon the sales of physical or digital sales of units for our living, and a lot of people don't know this, but songwriters, our rate of compensation is determined by the federal government. There's a mechanical rate, and we cannot get beyond that, 8.5 cents per song per unit sold. And if I have a publisher and a co-writer, then I'm down to 2.1 cents per unit sold. So obviously I don't get rich doing this, and if we can stop this, you know, the flood of lost revenues from songwriters and everybody else in the songwriting and music business food chain, so much the better.
Bob, you heard Stanley Leibowitz at the University of Texas a minute ago talk about the possibility of this stuff going abroad where, you know, the U.S. has and the Supreme Court has no say. Are you worried about that?
Well, I'm a lot less worried about that than I would have been if the ruling had gone against us. It was my understanding that there are some European countries sort of in wait-and-see mode to see how the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on this. And it's—I don't anticipate that illegal file sharing is going to disappear tomorrow. But I think we've made a great step in the right direction.
All right, Bob. Thanks for your call, Stanley. Will that happen because of now? You know, to talk about the EU and international trade agreements. Will Europeans and other countries have to pay attention to this ruling?
Well, I don't know that they have to. They certainly will pay some attention to it. Whether it will cause them to actually try to shut down the networks in their own countries, I don't know. One of the problems is that the networks can wind up in very obscure locations. So there's a network now which is in Russia that claims that it's legitimate, and my understanding is that the Russian government is saying it's legitimate, but they give you all the music you want for free. And it's harder to have an influence on Russia, say, than it is on some of the European countries. Mm-hmm. So there might be some movement, but that's yet to be seen.
The plaintiff in this case is MGM Studios. Now, we've been talking mostly about music. Why does a movie studio get involved?
Because the movie studios assume that they're next in line to get hit by file sharing. Right now, what we know is that it's sound files, it's music that people are downloading, and that's because the sound files are small, and so that it doesn't take very long to download them. And once you've downloaded them, you can play them in a lot of locations besides just your computer, because you can play them on your MP3 players. You can cut a CD out of them, burn a CD, and play it anywhere you can play a CD. With movies, they take a very long time to download, and when you have it, you still tend to be tethered to your computer, which is not where you want to necessarily watch your movies. So for most people right now, they can't take a movie that they would have downloaded and easily watch it on their big TV. So right now, there's not a lot of problems for the movie industry, but they know that when bandwidth gets bigger and people get more sophisticated with their use of computers with regards to movies, that they expect that people will start replacing the purchase of DVDs with the downloaded files, and that's what they're worried about.
What about this technology? Argument, the argument that this will dampen new technology because, we're simply not going to pursue it.
I don't think the ruling today has anything to say on technology because what they've said is if you have a clear, obvious, clear business model that doesn't do anything other than tell consumers that they should engage in copyright violations, then you can be shut down. Any real technology that's been created for purposes other than pure copyright infringement will be a much closer call that this case won't have much to say about. And there's the main decision today, and then there are two other decisions where they concur with the main decision. Each one of those other two decisions has three of the justices writing. One of them says, we like Sony with a very narrow interpretation so that if you have a new technology, you'll be protected, and if we had to vote on it, we would vote to protect Sony and protect the technology, and it's going to be tough on the copyright owners. The other three wrote the exact opposite, that they think that Sony needs to be loosened up and needs to be made, looked at where how much infringement's really going on, and if it's a lot of infringement, that they would loosen Sony up. The other three justices haven't given an opinion. So somewhere in the future, we may get an opinion giving more information about Sony. But this decision doesn't really say anything about Sony.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stachow, sitting in for Neil Conan. Stanley Liebowitz is with us today, professor of economics at the University of Texas at Dallas. We're talking about the Grokster decision today by the U.S. Supreme Court. Joining us now is Rick Karns, the president of the Songwriters Guild of America. Joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Hi, Rick.
Hey, how's it going, Frank?
This is a big victory for the recording industry. Do you worry that the lawsuits may alienate consumers?
Well, actually, I think this is more a victory for consumers than it is for the recording industry because we've had a situation where there hasn't been a thriving, growing, legal online market. And because they were having to compete with stolen goods, they were having to compete with electronic shoplifting, essentially. But now I think we're going to have a situation where there's some clarity and some rules of the road for people trying to open up legal services. And that's going to bring capital in the market and grow that market. And people are going to have a lot of really good legal choices online, which will help everybody.
Now, we've heard a lot about the loss of revenue over the past few years since this technology has come online. Do you expect to be able to get customers back, and what will you do to get them?
Well, I think the best thing that we can do to bring customers back is to offer them good, exciting new products. But it's hard to do that when your revenues have been so impacted by piracy. But I think as people understand that there are really good legal alternatives out there and as they start exploring them, particularly some of the music subscription services where you can get 1 million songs for $7.99 a month, I mean, that's amazing if you think about it. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of choice, and I think that'll be good, and that'll bring the kind of profits back into the system that will allow us to create more new music, and then people will get excited about it again.
There are some new CDs, groups like Dave Matthews Band, they're starting to come up with locks that keep the owners from copying the music. You think that's the future in the recording industry?
I don't know what the future is. I think most everybody realizes we're in flux right now. If I had to guess what the future would be, I would probably think people are going to kind of gravitate away from physical product because why store it if you can just get it every day and update it on your computer and then haul it around in a portable device of some sort. That seems like an easier system for me.
Stanley Liebowitz, as these court decisions become more and more complicated, and we've said before, they're a little bit behind, do you think technology is going to come up with better answers to how to secure music than the courts in the future?
I think technology could come up with better solutions, but they haven't because there was no incentive for them to. Because of the Grokster case, quite frankly. Now they are going to start realizing, I hope, that we can't just incentivize technology. We also have to incentivize creators. And so now we've got a balance. I think the court struck the exact balance that we needed to have that doesn't stop, for instance, it doesn't stop P2P peer, you know, file sharing, it actually just makes it that they have to pay us. So now we've got the best of both worlds. We've got the technology, the innovation going forward, and we have the creators getting compensated.
All right, Rick, thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure.
Rick Carnes is president of the Songwriters Guild of America, joined us by phone from RIAA offices in Washington, D.C. Stanley Liebowitz, thank you as well.
Are we done?
We're done.
Okay.
There's a professor of economics at the University of Texas in Dallas. Thanks very much. When we come back from a short break, we're going to switch from the power of the copyright to the power of the press. Today's Supreme Court limited journalists' ability to protect their sources, and we'll take you to Washington, D.C.'s National Mall for a taste of this year's Smithsonian Folklife Festival, camel decorating in Oman, after the break. I'm Frank Stacio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.